They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Shu Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights. On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Shu Bartholomew. Radio Fairfax, joining us today, we have the person that a lot of my listeners, regular listeners, tell me needs to be cloned. Everybody wants a Bill Davis in their neighborhood. Bill, how do we clone you and how do we multiply you so that there's a little bit of you to go around for everyone?
I appreciate the accolade, Shu, but...
It's not me, it's my listeners, so you're doing okay. Something right.
Well, I guess trying to educate people on things that they can do and assessing what they can do and becoming aware of what rights they have or don't have, and dispelling some of the myths.
Well, I think that's what we're going to be talking about a little bit today, right?
Sure.
Because, you know, Bill, and I'm sure you get a lot of these calls as well from people wanting to know what they can do and can the board do that to me? I mean, this is what the board's doing. Can they do that? And there's so much misinformation and misunderstanding. And you know what, Bill? It's these damned attorneys who should know better, or probably do know better, that are giving out all this misinformation.
Sure, because they get paid from somebody that has money to try and go up against somebody that, you know, isn't able to spend other people's money.
So we'll talk about that. We're going to give people a list of what to look for today and what to think about. But I think before we get there, you sent me something. And ultimately, you said, just now, you said that it's people who want to get your money.
Yes.
But they want more than your money. They want your home.
Yeah, I think this is a group of people that just enjoy harming other people. That's my fundamental... deal with a bunch of this stuff. This isn't about business. This isn't about community and any of that nonsense. It's the most, you know, backwards, sicko community that anyone's ever heard of. But, yeah, this was a CLE course being taught by a prominent HOA attorney. Notice I say HOA attorney, meaning they claim to specialize in HOA-type work, but they don't represent homeowners.
They shouldn't, because that's a huge conflict of interest.
Well, they always only represent the corporation, and anyone that thinks the corporation represents the homeowners is smoking something. It only represents the interests of a few board members or the vendors. That's it. It doesn't represent the interests of the homeowners.
It's the vendors, Bill. You hit the nail on the head. They represent the vendors.
Oh, yeah. But what's really sad is he's promoting... he's selling a CLE course, which is a continuing legal education course. You know, attorneys in a bunch of states have to take, like other licensed professionals have to take, these continuing legal education classes a certain number of hours every year. And so he's touting a purchase his CLE course on how to foreclose on homeowners and HOAs and condominiums. And what's worse is it's co-sponsored by the Young Lawyers Association here locally. They're trying to promote getting, you know, younger attorneys involved in this process. No. You can read it. I sent it to you, Shu. No, it's pretty...
Young Lawyers Association? Young Lawyers Association. No, I know what the industry attorneys do. I mean, there are a few of them who are good, but by and large, most of them, you know, they make the world a really, really bad place. But they're young lawyers. They're enticing them into this kind of business.
Oh yeah, they're trying to promote it. Yes.
Wow. They're
trying to promote it. You saw the ad. I can't even. I have nothing nice to say about it. And I hope to, if I happen to encounter one of these young lawyers, I hope to discourage them. In the next case where I'm representing a homeowner, where one of these young lawyers is involved representing the HOA, and I mean discourage them in a legal manner as opposed to just a gentle talking to, you know, like costing their client a bunch of money. But at any rate, and what's really sad about the ones that I've seen is it's always about the HOA attorney getting money, not about their client getting money.
Yes.
That you know, this goes back decades. This was the priority of payment scam. Is, you know, why would the vendors get the board to adopt a resolution through all sorts of trickery and chicanery? Why would they get the board to adopt a resolution that made sure the HOA client was the last one getting paid and that the management company and HOA attorney could heap on all these junk fees and things that aren't provided for under the restrictive covenants, and yet they're supposed to be, you know, doing all this for the benefit of the HOA? It's completely contrary to the interest of their client. And all the cases I've seen, it always boils down to the HOA client getting the shaft and the management company and HOA attorney getting all the gravy. And by the way, the HOA client often doesn't know, because guess who's keeping the books and whose only interface for communication is between the HOA or between the members? It's going to be the attorney and the management company. Yeah.
You know, it's pure thuggery and terrorism.
Yes. Domestic terrorism.
It is. It absolutely is domestic terrorism, and it's thuggery on their part.
I call it thugdom. Yep, I agree with you.
You call it what?
A thugdom.
It sounds a thugdom. It sounds rude, but it sounds
It's not a kingdom or a fiefdom or a fiefdom. It's a thugdom.
It's a thugdom, huh? Mm-hmm. I like that. Yeah. I like that. You know, you and I have come up with some really new language for HOAs. The only problem is, and I started using all of that, the only problem is that things don't come up when you use language that the rest of the world doesn't use.
That's
so
true.
If you use involuntary, and I don't know what, membership, developments, or whatever you want to call them, IUDs?
Well, I just try calling them involuntary membership, you know, organizations or whatever else, because it, you know, or just focusing on involuntary membership, because all the supporters just, they get almost frantic, and they say, oh, it's mandatory membership, not involuntary. I say, well, what do you think the difference between the two? Mandatory is a euphemism for involuntary. Or they'll come up and say, oh, you have a choice. You have a choice. You didn't have to buy there. Oh, yeah. The choice is which organization do you become an involuntary member of? I mean, their logic just kind of falls apart pretty quick. It just doesn't, you know, there's no reason to have this tied into housing, with the exception maybe of condos, because it's purely statutory. But,
You know, even in condos, you don't need, I mean, you need to be a member because there are common expenses that need to be paid, but you don't need the governance structure. The rest of the world manages very nicely without being told what they can wear when they leave their apartment.
Right. Or what cars they can drive, or, you know, what types of cats they can have. I have no idea.
How many cats and how much?
What color window dressing they're allowed to have, what brand of paint they're allowed to use. I mean, I saw one pretty recently. I couldn't even believe it. It was, they were cited for not using a particular color of gray, which, I kid you not, I looked it up. I couldn't find it anywhere. And it just sounded so pretentious. I just thought, it had to be some whacked out board member of an HOA. It was in the Northeast. I'll get the article to you. But I just, you know, so why can't they paint their, it was their property. It wasn't the commonly owned property. It was the homeowner's own property, but yeah.
We had a chain store over here called Hackinger's. I don't know how far they went, but it was a hardware store, much like Home Depot. And they carried a certain brand of paint that locally was only available in Hackinger's. And one of the developers built this huge association. And in the governing documents, it said when people bought their houses, they were given a paint chip. And you could only ever paint your front door or your trim or your house or whatever it was you were painting with this particular brand of paint. And they gave the number. Okay? Now, this was trendy in the 70s when the place was 60s and 70s when the place was built. Hackinger's kept that paint number because they had a lot of local clients for it, locally. But you know what? When Hackinger's went out of business, the paint was no longer available. And besides, when you walked in and you looked around, everything was so dated. You know, automatically, the first thing you saw was this color from the 60s. And you knew that it was a dated, you know, it was a dated development. It was a dated neighborhood.
Yeah.
But people don't think in terms of doing that. So people, now you have these covenants that say the only color you can use is this particular color. And this particular paint brand and this particular number, it's not available. And why don't other companies sue the pants off these people for alienation of trade? If I'm company A and, you know, it's not my paint company, brand that's being used, and you've got 6,000 people living in this association that cannot use my paint. Not because they don't want to use my paint, but because they're not allowed to use my paint.
Right. Well, you're actually hitting on a topic that's been a sore point for me for several years, where I think an antitrust type of analysis needs to be performed on some of these, because it isn't just you will use a certain brand of paint. It's you are required to consume certain economically unregulated resources, like where we were. Water is very poorly regulated by the state. You know, they claim it is, but they were doing all sorts of stuff to force us to use the developer's water company as opposed to our own groundwater, which we're entitled to do in our state. They were trying to force the use of to purchase propane from a particular vendor, even though there was no requirement in the restrictive covenants to purchase propane from that particular vendor. But they, you know, what happened is you get a group that controls either the architecture committee or the board, and they try to impose this on people. They try to force it. It's really a conspiracy for strain against trade. And I think agreements like, to the extent that they're embodied in a contract, you know, one of the defenses that big companies use all the time is that's an unenforceable provision. It's a, you know, restraint against trade. It's an antitrust violation. And so I'd like to see some more of these attacked on those grounds. And one of the big concerns, if you look, or big concerns, it's a concern that's been around for a while. If you notice what CAI promotes, look at their public policies. They talk, the one on video programming, it's so dated. It's obviously something from the 70s when you had a master satellite dish that would pump TV programming to make it available to all the units in a complex or something like that. But, you know, they promote it's the association's right to have this monopoly. You need to read that provision really closely because, you know, they don't like using the word corporation because if you use the word association, it confuses the populace as to whether you're talking about the corporate entity or you're talking about the individuals. But they're talking about the corporate entity. It's like, whoa, why should this entity have a monopoly and have the exclusive right to force me to have to purchase this stuff?
Yeah.
Same thing, if you also look, they added a few years ago electricity. And that's another area that should be of concern to people is, well, if electricity is deregulated, are you, because that's fairly new development, you know, in housing and around the country is a deregulated electricity. And it's not deregulated everywhere, but where it's deregulated, it's economic deregulated, and the problem is you couple economic deregulation and then remove choice by forcing people to have to buy using threat of fine and foreclosure on their home, forcing them to have to buy from a vendor that, you know, the developer mandated or that's tied in with the management company in some way. That's pretty troubling, because the theory with deregulation is you would have choice and you would choose, maybe not based on cost. It could be based on cost. It'll probably be a primary one. It could be quality of service. It could be any number of things, but cost would certainly be a big one in electricity. And yet, it hurts not only the people that live in the subdivision or in the complex, but it hurts competitors, because it doesn't matter if they have a competitive price. The people that are in these places are slaves, and they are forced to have to purchase from a particular vendor under threat of fine and foreclosure in their home. And I think you're going to start seeing that with respect to electricity, and you've already seen it with respect to garbage, water, gas, internet services, cable TV services, things of that nature.
You know, right now the Toastmasters International Convention's going on right now in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia.
Wow.
Usually you think of, you know, everything I'd seen and read about Malaysia, didn't sound really nice. But a lot of the Toastmasters are sending photos back, and they are absolutely amazed at the technology of what's going on in Malaysia. And a lot of them are going, wow, you know, we thought in America we were ahead of the curve in terms of technology. We are so far behind. I mean, if you could see some of the photos that people are sending. And somebody wrote in and said, in, you know, that there's a lot of solar energy that's being used. In HOAs, you're not allowed to have solar panels, you know. Even though there's legislation that says you can't do it, CAI comes, oh, well, we've got to be able to regulate, we've got to be able to, in the size and the placement and all of this. Over there, it's just apparently that you don't have the problems that you have here with electricity.
Yeah, well, it sounds like they respect people's rights better than these trade groups. I mean, there's a lot of money in oppressing people, so that's what they do.
but the thing is, Bill, it's these policies that are holding us back.
I agree with you.
It is the CAI-imposed policies, their rules, their regulations, and the big hammer that they have that's holding the progress of this country back. When you think of the number of people living in these damn things.
Oh, yeah. It's a huge percentage of the population.
It's a huge percentage of the population that can't dig a well like you can't.
Well, we can.
That can't.
It just took 7 years of litigation and a bunch of money, but we can.
Now you can, but look at
now
what it took. Yeah, but you know what? And here's where this shows, when we get off our high horses, but here's where this show's going to go. Is knowing what your rights are and knowing how to do your homework and how to assert your rights, because you're an attorney and you knew what you were doing, and it took 7 years, a ton of money, just to be able to use water that you already own.
Correct.
Right?
Yes.
But not everybody knows that.
Right.
Do you
know? Even worse, the people that suspected it, there's some weird us versus them mentality where they wanted to line up with align themselves with the entity that they thought was going to win, and it worked really hard at marginalizing. You know, it's not just a fight between entities; it's a public information agenda. It's the warfare gets fought on many fronts, not just in court, but also that's an area where the fight's probably unlike any other fight. You know, they try to affect people socially at home, and not just something that's at work or that's a lawsuit where you go, you know, it's addressed in the courts, but not at your house. It's a particularly vicious one, because you end up with boards and management companies trying to communicate messages in order to cast contempt and hatred towards the homeowners that don't go along with the groupthink agenda, or that, you know, recognize that, no, this board's out of line. It makes it particularly vicious, but, yeah.
Well, I'm talking to some people. There's one lady in particular, and I'm not going to even tell you which coast she's on. But do you know how terrified she is? She's absolutely terrified of answering her phone, of going out of her house, of checking her mail, of opening the door, in case it's the HOA that's coming after her.
I can definitely understand that. You get these tacky, anonymous, threatening letters from the management company claiming that somebody saw you doing this, or it was reported or observed. It's like the brown, what are they, the brown shirts, the
yeah.
block warts?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, we know what ultimately happened to them, and maybe that'll happen to the management company employees before too long, but it's, you know, nobody likes getting those letters. It's designed to intimidate and to mess with people. There's really no other, and frankly, Shu, what I'd like to start doing, and unfortunately this will, when it gets out in the air, but the I find that a bunch of these statements that are made are the management company had absolutely no right to. Well, I'm finding, first of all, that they don't have an agreement that will authorize them to send these letters out to the homeowners.
Right.
These unsolicited homeowners. Number two, they make claims that the HOA has certain rights that it doesn't have.
Yes.
And essentially that you're prohibited from doing something on your property. And Texas has a law, and our favorite senator tried to get it changed a couple of years ago, but it basically says that when you make user present documents that you know make a false claim of an interest in real or personal property with the intent to cause harm, you're liable to the plaintiff for $10,000 a pop per document. Okay, I think these management companies need to be held liable for that, because what they're doing is they're flooding neighborhoods with these things to collect $15 or $20 a letter from their client, and I think they need to be held liable under the provisions that provide for damages when you send out these fraudulent documents. And they may claim, "Well, we didn't know." Well, then what business did they have sending out those letters threatening people?
Wait a minute. Let me see if I understand this, Bill.
Yeah.
I'm the management company. I send you a letter, and I tell you that you may not leave your front door open for more than the 12 seconds I think it should take you to go in and out, and you were observed at leaving it open for 15 seconds, and therefore I'm fining you $100. Is that the kind of thing you're talking about?
Yes.
And so what would the law do to me for sending that if there's nothing in the governing documents? Or even if there is something in the governing documents, I mean.
Well, the law is going to vary from state to state, but
Texas happens to have.
There's a couple of things, and what I've been exploring is the use of the unauthorized practice of law statute to go after these management companies and the HOAs, because you know a lot of these fee agreements are contingent, which are supposed to be prohibited now in Texas, but I'm sure that they still engage in that practice, and I'm confident it goes on elsewhere, but the unauthorized practice of law statute is very similar in a lot of states. And you may or may not be aware, but CAI has become absolutely paranoid of these. They lobbied heavily in Florida and in Arizona to try to change the unauthorized practice of law statutes to basically allow management company employees to engage in the unauthorized practice of law. Unfortunately, in Florida, they've had recent legislation. It looks like they're now, I think this is going to be a battle with the Florida Supreme Court, because I don't think the legislature can just take away the Florida Supreme Court's authority to regulate the practice of law, which is what these management companies are doing. But the unauthorized practice of law, I'll give you an example, is they will prepare a document like a, quote, affidavit of lien or something of this effect, and they'll go file it. They'll charge the homeowner for that, and they may or may not charge the HOA, but they'll have a contingency fee arrangement with the HOA that provides the management company gets $30 for every month that the homeowner doesn't pay this fee, and if they collect it, the management company gets paid first, and then if there's anything left over, it goes to the HOA. Something like that. But unauthorized practice of law, when they file those documents, that affects an interest in real property, okay? Because they intended it to operate as a lien, it's tied to your property, and frequently it wasn't prepared by an attorney. Okay, one of the requirements is you have a document like that, it's got to be prepared by an attorney. Okay, and that's what CAI was trying to fight in Florida. They didn't want liability for the management companies going in and preparing these documents. Another usual provision in unauthorized practice of law statutes is is compensating someone for what is the practice of law, and the exception will be, they can get reimbursed. There's no law, the law doesn't prohibit them from being reimbursed when they paid somebody else for the unauthorized practice of law. I mean, for what would have been a legitimate exercise of an attorney's powers. The problem is these are often contingency arrangements where no payment has been made. So when they have a contingency fee arrangement and then they're demanding that the homeowner pay, that the management company is demanding the homeowner to pay an amount, that's not a reimbursement, Shu. Reimbursement is you paid money, okay, and you need to be reimbursed for what you paid. But that's not the kind of arrangements these guys have going on. They didn't pay any money, and it's a pure contingency fee agreement where the law firm is essentially operating through the management company to collect a fee for the preparation of these documents. You can't do that because the management company demanding the fee is only entitled to reimbursement. It's not entitled to a contingent payment, if that makes any sense. It's demanding a fee that it did not pay. So in my book, that's unauthorized practice of law. It doesn't matter that they would eventually pay the law firm. The problem is that they're not seeking reimbursement. And you'll find that a lot of the unauthorized practice of law statutes are very similar. That's one. Another situation in Texas is, you know, about 25 years ago, there was a group called the Republic of Texas, and they went around, I'll make fun of it a little bit, holding people's court, rendering judgment against local politicians, judges, you know, legislators, things of that nature, and then they would go file a document that looked like a lien, you know, from the people's court, and identify property that was owned by the legislator, the judge, local politician, whoever. And so the legislature came up with some laws, and this is probably going to be more particular to Texas, although you may have similar laws in other states. But it basically said if you make, use, or present a document that claims a false interest in real or personal property, and I'm paraphrasing, by the way, there's several, it could be, you know, there's several categories that could qualify as, so I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but someone who makes or presents or uses a document that claims a false interest in or against real or personal property with the intent to cause financial harm or mental anguish is liable to the plaintiff in the amount of $10,000 per document. And so it's really $10,000 per document per person harmed. And there's case law in Texas that says the court can hold each defendant liable. So, for example, if it's a management company and a law firm, they can both be required to pay $10,000 a pop. If it's a married couple, for example, that owns the property,
uh-huh.
and they're sending these, you know, tacky, threatening letters out with no basis at all, that's $20,000 because
wow.
it's a married couple. Yeah, because they're harming two people and their property interests. But the bottom line is these management companies are making absolutely false claims. They claim an entitlement to enforce something which they don't have. They claim that such and such is prohibited under some provision of the restrictive covenants. Really, that's an interpretation of law. These management companies aren't attorneys. They're not judges. They're not, and it's frequently a false claim. And they may claim, oh, we didn't know, ignorance. Well, I don't buy it because they were certainly interested in the $15 or $20 they got paid to send out the letter.
Yeah.
They flood these subdivisions. Just they'll do anything to come up with some justification for sending out a letter and charging their HOA client a chunk of change for sending out these letters. And, of course, in the past, it's always been very lucrative for them because they send out these letters. It gets the entire neighborhood in chaos because what happens, you get somebody calling up and saying, well, how come it's okay for Joe over here? I want to report somebody else. So the management company generates its own, you know, business because people call up and say, well, how come it's, I want to report somebody else, or I'm mad about this, or whatever else. And the management company gets a list of other people, which it then sends out threatening letters to. It's a pretty sick, you know, operation. But I want to start holding them accountable at $10,000 a pop for these documents. And I think the fact that our favorite soon-to-be former senator was trying to get that law changed, indicates potentially some exposure the industry has under that statute for what they're doing. Now, that's going to be particular to people in Texas. However, I think there's probably similar documents for people in other states. There's certainly usually some type of liability for filing false documents with the court. And another common thing I see in Texas is the management companies try to conceal, well, frequently try to conceal their involvement in the case for several reasons. One, they'll have an employee claim to be the managing agent for the HOA. Well, in Texas, that's not the way it works. The management company files what's called a management certificate with the county, and it's required to do so, that designates the management company as the managing agent. So when the management company then turns around and has an employee signing off on documents that the management company knows the employee is not the managing agent, well, that's fraud, isn't it? I mean, it's pretty apparent the management company knows the employee isn't the managing agent because the management company filed the documents with the county clerk designating itself as the managing agent. But from an evidentiary standpoint, it also causes problems as to the veracity of the fees they claim are owed, because it's not really the HOA that's preparing that information. It's the management company, of course, that claims that all these fees and all this other junk stuff is due. But what I'm trying to get at is when you look at the documents that are sent, they will not properly identify the agency relationship between the parties. It should have been the John Smith, such and such manager or vice president or authorized representative of Happy Times Management Company, which is the managing agent for the HOA. But that's not what they do. They'll just have John Smith and sign off as managing agent.
You know what really drives me absolutely insane?
What's that?
Is that the management companies and the managers are employees of the homeowners. The homeowners pay their salaries. And yet it's the managers and the management companies that are dictating and overseeing the homeowners. I mean, that putting, having the tail wag the dog, only in America would that be possible. Well, nobody else would accept that.
You know, the industry also is actively, they try and compare these things to cities and legitimate governments.
No.
Which, under transparency laws everywhere, requires things like people's salaries to be public information. Like, you can go look up the salary of individual employees of state and local government here. And yet they strive so hard to prevent homeowners from having access to the records of the association. Why is that? I thought this was a mini democracy. Isn't that what they keep telling us?
Yeah, right. Very funny. We're talking to Bill Davis, the guy all my listeners think should be cloned, and everybody wants a piece of him. And I am just thrilled to have him as a friend and a frequent guest on the show, because we always learn so much from Bill. Bill, one of the things that we're going to be talking, all of this is just, it's just really unconscionable. But there's got to be a way for the homeowners to fight back, to assert their rights, to know their rights, and to stop the management companies in their tracks and return things back to the way they're supposed to be, where the management company is an employee and doesn't tell you what to do, and isn't entitled to additional costs and fees. They're hired to do something.
Yeah.
And they need to do that. They should. It's like going to the grocery store. The grocery store hires the cashiers and the stockers and all of that. You don't expect to go in and have them tell you what to buy and then charge you extra for ringing it up for you. But yet in an HOA, these things are being done routinely. It's incredible. So how can people How can people protect their rights? How can people put a stop to this nonsense?
Well, you have to know the laws in your state, which unfortunately were largely created and lobbied for by the industry, so they're very favorable to the industry. So if you're talking about long-term changes, you have to lobby to get the law changed either at the state or the federal level, which isn't really helpful to people on a short-term basis.
No.
People don't like suing, but unfortunately that is one of the few other alternatives. Moving is always touted by, you don't like it, then move. Well, that's not a very practical solution for people who incur the transaction costs of having moved there and moving away, and part of it being based upon the representations that HOAs preserve property values, which, of course, we know that is absolutely false and unsupported by any empirical evidence. But unfortunately, it's not that I want to promote litigation. I'm just not aware of a solution other than, because what you have is you have one group intent on harming another group, and you have a board of directors or vendors who profit either through ego or money from doing this. I tell you, that CLE you saw, it's my personal belief those folks are a sick group that truly enjoy threatening people with foreclosure and trying to extort money from them by threatening to foreclose and then actually foreclosing. They've been doing it for a long time.
They're drunk on power. On power. I mean, you're right.
Well, Solomon had talked, he has a pretty good website. I think it's hoaacademy.com or org or .net. I don't know. It's one of those. But he has all these videos, and he talks about how they're, I'm not a psychologist or psychiatrist or doctor or anything, but he talks about brain chemicals that, pleasure centers and things like that. This actually gives people pleasure. And, I don't know how else to group those people, but when you're dealing with that, you don't really have many options. If you either can take it to the streets or you can go to court, there's not really much else to do. And I don't, I understand people say, oh, get involved, become a member of the board. Well, that can take years. It's not really, it's not a practical solution for people in the short term either.
No.
And that's still assuming that there's a right person that can be in charge or in control, and that's the whole problem. There shouldn't be this platform for people to create all this chaos to begin with, and that's what causes it. I'm personally involved in litigation right now, as an attorney, but the board members, several of them were actually defendants a couple of years ago in a lawsuit, and they were ready for the HOA to be destroyed and obliterated. But then they ended up becoming on the board a couple of years later, and now they just want the HOA to, go out and build parks and have all these other liabilities, which means the HOA has to stick around. And oh, by golly, you just got to have an HOA. And there's just, what's wrong with this? There's something wrong here where, they were so ready for this to be destroyed, and now as long as they are the ones in charge, you got to have an HOA. Come on. It's...
Fred Goldbecker, the guy who litigated Gilman in Virginia, was a very good friend of mine, and he used to say to me, Shoop, when I first got involved in HOAs, he'd say, it's not that they object to what's going on, it's just that they want to be Hitler. It's not that they don't like Hitler, they just want to be Hitler. And I think that's what you're describing. They didn't like the board that was there, and they didn't like that. Now that they are the board, well, hey, that's a different, they're seeing things from a whole different angle.
Well, they get to spend other people's money. They don't, the other people have to indemnify them financially. There's an insurance policy that they bought with other people's money to protect them. That's one thing that's kind of weird. Why is it that the HOA can have insurance that essentially it can use against the homeowner, but there isn't really an insurance product that protects homeowners when an HOA sues the homeowner?
That's a good question.
Well, there's, insurance is out hawking all sorts of products. Why is it there one like that?
Probably because they'd go bankrupt if they had one. these are guys, they're pretty savvy. They're in it for the business. They're not in it to lose money, and I think that would be a losing proposition. With listen,
well,
are the millions of homeowners involved? Come on.
Well, if you think about it, though, there's a whole lot more homeowners than there are board members.
Yes.
And it's an opportunity to sell a whole lot more policies, and the industry's large enough to where it could actually affect changes in the law that are beneficial to that industry. And so, you know, that would be, I mean, I don't, it seems to me there'd be a whole lot of homeowners willing to pay some type of policy to give them the same type of protection against the board that the board is already using the homeowners' money, you know, for themselves. And it would be considerably less, but collectively far more than the insurance premiums that these boards are paying to insurance companies.
Interesting, now. Interesting thought. We ought to propose it to some insurance companies and see what happens.
Yeah.
Bill, we've got about 15 minutes, if that, left. I do want to get into some tips and things that people can do now if they find themselves in particular situations. And I think this was brought on recently. I was talking to Dennis Coker. This is the guy who makes furniture in California. And he was invited to go to, or he wasn't invited, he was notified that there was going to be a hearing in his case.
Okay.
And he didn't know if he'd be allowed to go. And he was informed by the HOA attorney that it was going to be an executive session. And I said, I wouldn't accept that if I were you. So we looked at the governing documents and the state statute, and it said that it could be if the homeowner requested it. And I said, don't, you know, any time the board wants to go into closed session, they're up to no good. If they're doing something that cannot withstand public scrutiny, they're up to no good.
Yeah.
Well, he informed them, you know, it went back and forth. They said, oh, okay, you know, you can have an open session, da-da. But they would not allow people in the room. So, in effect, it was an executive session. He was allowed to go in, but it was an executive session. So, what I always tell people, my advice is, don't ever, ever accept to go in under those circumstances. Go in. Take all your neighbors. If you can't find your neighbors, go out in the street and drag people in. But make sure that there are more people on your side of the table than the other side, because it's a game of intimidation.
I have to share this one with you, Shu. There's a couple locally that I'm representing against. I call it the FOA, the phony HOA, P-H-O-A, because it's not actually the HOA. A few guys created a corporation about a decade ago, actually closer to 15 years ago, and have represented to all their fellow homeowners that it's the original HOA, which it's not. And they've basically taken money from them. They filed liens against their neighbors. They have filed lawsuits against their neighbors. It's been pretty much the same four guys for about a decade and a half. And we decided we were going to put an end to it whenever they came after the folks that are now my clients. But you talk about the intimidation factor. We just attend the meetings that they schedule. They're supposed to put an agenda, but they don't. And what's happened is every time we attend a meeting, this has been going on for about 3 months now, as soon as we show up, they immediately adjourn the meeting.
Oh,
and then
really?
They walk out. Yeah, it's kind of crazy. And, you know, that's talk about, they don't even have to have an executive session. That's clearly a board that's up to no good. I think it's very helpful for the homeowners to know the laws. And, I mean, shoot, you didn't give me a whole lot of advance notice for this. But
I didn't.
The problem is this is really just such a corrupt, systemic, flawed program to begin with. The whole HOA thing, the fact that the states are essentially promoting these, local governments pushing them. You can't hardly find any other housing. And certainly all new housing seems to be generated into this kind of defective consumer product. But there are a number of groups that have propped up in different states to help inform homeowners. I think Marjorie's group down in, I think she's in Southern California?
Northern California. She's up in Sacramento.
Oh, she's doing a wonderful job.
She is
because
amazing.
They put out little flyers about what people's rights are and things like this, and it helps to know that unfortunately people get intimidated by the attorney for the other side. They get intimidated just from the fact that it's an attorney, and they shouldn't be. They should realize there's a lot of hacks out there that will lie, cheat, and steal. And there seems to be an unusual concentration of them that specialize in HOA law, representing HOAs. But they won't have any hesitation trying to intimidate the homeowner. And, of course, if the homeowner consents to it, then they're deemed to have waived it or to have accepted it or acknowledged it in the case you gave, executive session, okay. They really need to know more about their rights in these things. And the problem is it's pretty clear a lot of people don't, or else if they had a choice, they wouldn't have bought this product if they knew just how rigged this system was against them. But but the other side still feels a compulsion to lie, cheat, and steal. And a lot of times it's just not, like sending you bogus letters that claim you're in violation of something. Really? Well, where is that? Looking for laws that aren't just a defense, but a counterclaim against these guys. We're working to try and turn these into, instead of just hemorrhaging money from defending, going after them for damages the other direction, and forcing them to have to settle generously with the homeowner. I know this isn't real helpful to people, but unfortunately, this is just how messed up the system is. It's like, if somebody wants to have a very ugly divorce, which is essentially what these boards or vendors are trying to provoke, because it generates lots of fees for the vendors, you're kind of stuck. You have to go to court. There's not really an alternative. I mean, that's unfortunate. When somebody's looking at buying these properties, I've noticed that the management companies will not. Again, I'm going to be more familiar with the laws in Texas than I am in other states, and I'm not licensed in all 50 states. I'm licensed in a few of them, but
the people want you cloned, so you better start working on that, Bill.
That's a lot more bar exams. That's no fun. Well, they'll sign off on documents. For example, in Texas, they have a thing called a resale certificate that I maintain is mainly a windfall for the management companies.
Uh-huh.
But the only thing that it can offer a homeowner is an estoppel effect, meaning that anything that's not listed on there at the time of preparation of this resale certificate, if it's a claim or condition that existed but wasn't listed on there, then
they can't enforce it.
They can't enforce it forever. And what I would like to see people do, what I've noticed the management companies do, is either turning over an unsigned document. The Texas statute's a little weird. It actually specifically requires it to be signed. Why do you think it specifically required that? It's the same organization that's generating, the same person who is responsible for that legislation is the same guy whose management companies don't sign these documents. At any rate, one of them. But anyway, so the documents need to be signed. You need to make sure that they're signed appropriately. For example, if the county records reflect that so and so is the managing agent, or the such and such company is the managing agent, then you need to see somebody as an authorized representative of that company signing off on the document in order to make it valid. And I think those documents need to be recorded. Why? Because if they're not recorded, it's lost to the next homeowner and future buyers. It's beneficial to the seller to record it. It's also beneficial to the buyer to record it. See? And so they'll give you a document that's not suitable for recordation. And I think that the people really need to work at the time of closing to make sure these kinds of documents are actually recorded, because guess what? It's an estoppel forever. And if the only person that has a copy of these documents are the management company and its affiliates, guess what? When you're the next buyer, that's personal, confidential information of the prior person. We can't possibly turn that over to you.
Okay.
I like that.
I like that a lot, Bill.
Yeah. And it's forever a stop from ever enforcing it against anyone in the future. And so if it was an alleged deed restriction violation or something else, you've got your absolute immunity right there. And it's not just the statute of limitations. You actually have an estoppel that forever precludes them from doing anything. Another catch is, in this state, the management companies try to promote, we got to do an inspection of your property before we can issue a certificate. Well, the resale certificate statute does not require that, and people will, unfortunately, buyers, it's not in their interest to have an inspection because, for example, the HOA is required to list the stuff on there. Don't give them an opportunity to go find things.
Yeah.
If it existed at that time and isn't listed, you're they're forever stopped from doing it. So why would a buyer want to give the management company money to come up with something that's only going to hurt the buyer and the seller? It doesn't make any sense. But people get sold on this stuff like it's a good thing. Oh, you got to go do an inspection.
Yeah.
You know, we'll give you a certified one for X dollars. BS. You need a signed document. You paid for it. If it's not listed on there, you know, they can go pay for their own inspection. But you don't want the seller and you don't want the buyer to go pay for the management company to do an inspection. And after all, these aren't licensed attorneys. They're not licensed to practice law. These deed restrictions are interpreted as contracts, which is the practice of law. So what is it that this management company employee, who probably has no personal knowledge about your deed restrictions to begin with, what is it that this person is going to do to add anything to the equation other than essentially engaging in the unauthorized practice of law? So don't pay him to engage in a practice that's only going to hurt you.
You know, I must be channeling Fred Goldbecker today, because one of the things he always said was, whenever you were told something, ask them to cite their authority.
Right.
Quite often, you know, always just cite your authority. Just because a manager or even an attorney says something doesn't mean they know what they're talking about, or they're not lying. And it's not a personal thing that they're doing. Ask them to cite their authority. I've seen managers come up with segments of the governing documents that have nothing to do with what they're doing, and they go, here it is. And you go, wait a minute. I do speak English, you know. I do read and write English. You're not going to pass this one off on me. But they'll come up with stuff. Oh, well, here it is. No, ask them to cite their authority, because know your rights. Do your homework.
Right.
Know your rights.
Read the things that they're citing to, because you'll often find, like, I found a number when the management company claims it was authorized to do this stuff. Well, I went and read the management contract. It had absolutely no authority at all.
Yeah.
It was never granted any such authority. And, or deed restrictions that did not authorize this fining nonsense that they love to try and get out there. You know, another thing that might be possible is, just because there's an HOA doesn't mean that homeowners can't form another organization that would have largely a voluntary organization that would largely have the same opportunities as the HOA with respect to logistics. And when I say that, I mean that organization is allowed to purchase a D&O policy. But what I'm trying to say is, this industry really... it really thrives on dividing and conquering. It may be a whole subdivision, but they really try to marginalize the people in ways so that they can't get information, can't really communicate with each other, don't have access to the records, and have no idea that this is happening to all their other neighbors too. But when you can form a group, you do have some benefits of group effects. For example, if you had a group that was your new... it may not have all the powers of the original HOA, of course, but if you form another group, you can purchase an insurance policy, just like the HOA has, and that group can also file suit. When I say group, I'm referring to the organization, not the individuals in the organization, but the organization can file suit and achieve some of the same benefits and immunities that these board members of the HOA have because of the HOA organization. What I'm trying to say is, you can turn it into a fight of one organization against another instead of an individual against an organization.
You know what, Bill? I really like that. Unfortunately, you had to come up with that at the end of the show, didn't you?
Well, it's still exploratory. So.
It's still you know what? I really do like that. Are you aware of any that have done that?
I can't talk about it right now, but we're experimenting with it. Yes,
I like that, Bill.
Yep. We're testing it, but there's definitely more powers in the numbers, and you find that the people that join these organizations they're fine with transparency, because they wouldn't become a member. It's purely voluntary, unless the organization was going to offer some benefits from them. And you find that the people behind the HOA board end up trying to hide more behind the mask of the HOA.
It goes back to, if you can't operate If you cannot withstand public scrutiny, you're up to no good.
Yeah, yeah.
Bill, we are out of time.
Well, it was a pleasure, Shu.
I want to thank you a million times for doing this at the last minute.
Well, I wish I had a longer list that we could just hand over to people, but it's just not an easy thing.
No, but you know what? We can work on the list and you can come back and do it.
Okay.
Okay, because I'm serious. People do want you cloned. Is there a Bill Davis in my state? No, there isn't. Not yet, not yet. We're going to chop him up and send you a piece.
I want to go after these things and empower as many people as possible to defend themselves and engage in the same fight.
Thank you, Bill.
Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to justice for HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.